Good evening, everybody.
Hello and welcome to Disney Magic Hour episode 114. On this week's show, we're going to give you an advanced review of Pixar's Coco. We're going to discuss the Star Tours update and review Escape to Witch Mountain. To my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Joining us via Skype is Courtney Van Ren. Say hello, Courtney.
Hello, Courtney.
And currently experiencing flurries is Ryan Wilson of the Main Street Gazette. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs to visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, maybe flying into a mountain where you come from, it's weird, or traveling anywhere around the globe, visit the experts over at meitravel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. You are listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/pogomix. His website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at DisMagicHourPod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. We have a cool little group on Facebook. You can find that at Disney Magic Hour. And if you're already there, please add your friends, as a number of you did this last week. I appreciate that a lot. You can find this show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. Melissa, pictures and support. Where can we get all those?
You can go to Instagram and search Disney Magic Hour Podcast, and we're there. And then if you want to help support the show and keep us going, you go to patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour, and you can find out how you can help.
And Ryan, where can everyone find the Main Street Gazette?
They can find it at mainstgazette.com. If you're looking for our Instagram or our Twitter, that's Main ST Gazette as well. And if you're looking for us on Facebook, just search for Main Street Gazette.
Huzzah and welcome. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Courtney, you're not experiencing flurries, right?
I'm not at the moment, but I think I missed them.
You are flurries.
And I'm very sad about it.
No flurry for you.
I know.
Aw, it's fine. I'm sure you'll get your fix of the flurries.
I will.
Come forth. I want to take a quick moment and just say a big thank you to all the Patreon supporters that we have, because Mr. Ryan Wilson, tell everyone about what you have over there.
So what I have over here, if you're paying attention, is a much cleaner sound this morning because we have upgraded my microphone to make sure that I had better quality for everyone out there.
Yay!
Yay!
And that was specifically done with, you know, the support that we get from the Patreon fund. So thank you guys so much who do that. Again, that's patreon.com/DisneyMagicHour. You know, we're always looking to improve, and actually we have some equipment that is starting to break that I have to replace. Everyone who goes over there, thank you so much. And even if you just support the show by listening to us, it's hugely appreciated, of course. But if you do join the Patreon, just so you know, weekly we watch a movie and we do a live thread on it. And this week's live thread, I got to say, Melissa flew it solo. She flew solo. Because I just had to figure out what the hell the Justice League movie was about, admittedly so. And we watched Escape to Witch Mountain.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
So, I mean, we're going to talk about a couple other things before we really dig into Escape to Witch Mountain. I saw the movie Eliza as a kid. Like, I watched it consistently as a kid. I remember watching that a lot. And you thought it was amazing from your comments. That's what I gathered.
I don't know if you read the same comments that I wrote.
I did.
But I don't know. It was mine and Anthony's first time watching it. I'm not sure if it was Brittany's also. But yeah, we were definitely
enthralled. Yep. Great. Okay. Well, more to talk about that later. And I know that Courtney sent some explicit texts when she read it, when she watched it. So this ought to go great. Ryan's the only one who I really... I mean, come on. Ryan understands, I'm sure. Right? I don't know.
We'll find out.
But Melissa, you did actually get to see something more recent, just yesterday. Tell the folks about it.
I did. I got to see Coco. The Disney Parks blog was doing a little advanced screening. They actually did it really cool this year. You know, when you normally go to the movies with Disney Parks blog Pete, when we go, they usually...
Disney Parks blog Pete. Yes, that's what they call me.
Yes. DPBB. They kind of just let you go in the theater and like find your seats. Well, this one, upon check-in, they had all the tickets on like a huge like board, and you could pick out your seats that way. So this way, then you could go and get your popcorn and you'd have guaranteed seats. So I really like that change.
They actually did that for the Star Wars Rogue One, the screening of Rogue One. Yeah, it was all laid out on a couple of tables and you picked your actual seat locations. It was great. Yeah. It was really great.
I really like that. They did not show us the Frozen short. They just showed us the trailers for Wrinkle in Time and Last Jedi. But I got to see the full Coco, and my review is, I only watched the second trailer of Coco, and I kind of got a little, like, nervous. I was like, oh, is this going to be very, like, brave, cookie cutter? Like, I got a little worried, because usually Pixar doesn't do humans. You know, they don't do stories with a lot of humans in it. And then even, like, the ones they do, like, Up, there's a very limited cast. So I was getting worried with all the, you know, stuff I was seeing in the trailers, but the trailers did not show anything. The movie was fantastic and bring tissues, especially for the Thanksgiving weekend. The whole theme of family is in there, and yeah, bring tissues.
What, it's like, does someone like get sick at Thanksgiving and fall asleep on the couch?
Sure, no.
It's always the best part of Thanksgiving. That sounds good. Great. I'm happy that I know you and Steph went.
Yes.
I want to just point out, Steph went because I decided to take a pass because I wanted to play some arcade games. There was a free-to-play arcade convention out here, and it was really cool. So I'm happy that you and Steph, she really liked it.
Yeah.
You guys both really responded positively to this film.
Both of us were looking forward to it. She's a huge Day of the Dead fan, and yeah, we were both blown away by how good it was.
Good to hear. Good to hear. Man, whoever's cutting those trailers for Pixar. Either they're doing it incredibly well because we're being surprised on a number of occasions, or they're terrible at their job. I don't know which one it is. It's A or B, and I haven't quite figured it out yet.
Well, that being said, the Incredibles 2 trailer that dropped, the little teaser that dropped, kind of gives you a lot to work with.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, is it going to be Jack focused? Obviously, this is very soon after the first film. You know, if I remember correctly, there may have been some mention that, like, the second film opens with the Underminer battle.
Didn't they mention, like, it takes place immediately where the first one left off? I think that was,
that's
the
where the Underminer battle.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, I thought that was the phrase.
So, yeah, that trailer came out, which it looks cool. It's weird. You know, it's so weird because the first movie was so long ago, and the technology has taken so many leaps since it. It's like looking at a video game that was made, you know, 15 years ago, and then it's the next one comes out, like, this year on the newest tech, and you're like, oh, my God, everything looks so much cleaner. It's crazy looking. So it was a cool little thing. It's just a teaser, you know, just Jack making some problems. I kind of get the idea that they're keeping Jack's powers a secret from Mom, because they're in the basement at the time. If you notice, they're in the basement. The door's closed to the upstairs. And I'm starting to think that, like, they're keeping Baby's powers a secret from Mom. I don't know. We'll see.
Well,
no, didn't. You can argue that the kid was up in the air and they didn't really see what was going on in the first one.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's possible, but that would be a very interesting spin considering that he's a baby.
You're a baby.
Sometimes.
All right, great. I'm excited. I'm happy that you got such a good response to Coco. And the Rotten Tomatoes score, not that it really matters, but it is quite high right now.
I think it should be. It's definitely warranted. And the look of the film is really cool, too.
That was always the thing that I think attracted everyone was the look of the film. It was just the trailer came out, and you were like, all right, yeah, I guess, you know.
And, of course, Michael Giacchino does his wonderful music again.
Dude never sleeps.
Yeah, I don't know.
Speaking also towards Michael Giacchino, who did some work on some Star Wars films already, there was an update to Star Tours that released this week over at Hollywood Studios. And in particular, it was a new sequence, a couple of new touches, and a new finish in particular that was very, very cool. And I'm going to talk about it. So I apologize if you don't want to know anything about them. I don't know. Don't read the internet because they're kind of all the details are sort of all over the place. So there's a new planet called Crate. And I want to let you know right now, it gives no spoilers towards the movie. Someone asked us that on the page. You know, hey, does this new sequence, you know, ruin anything for the movie? It doesn't. You're just flying through a planet, or I should say maybe underneath the planet in a sense. But what was really nice to see was last year or the year before with the Force Awakens edition, we had John Boyega actually show up, you know, on screen. This year, it's Oscar Isaac, who is Poe Dameron. He actually is not only part of the action sequence when you're flying through Crate, he is another option for the transmission message, you know, which has been normally lately BB-8. I know Yoda's another option, and Leia. I think those three are options.
Yeah.
Is there another one in there?
There's Ackbar.
Ackbar. I never see Ackbar.
I think I don't know if they pulled him or not, but he was there for a while.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen him in a long time, which is a bummer because that was kind of the whole point of all these options. Was that you would have options. Anyways, so I actually kind of knew about Poe Dameron going in, but what I didn't expect was seeing Domhnall Gleeson, who plays General Hux. He even pops up in the video. So it felt, you know, just that little addition, it just felt so much more connected to the movie that I really, really liked it. I thought the sequence was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's so much sharper looking than some of the other sequences, though.
Valid.
Like, the colors are bursting out of it, especially because if you've seen anything, it's sort of like a red clay mining planet, and that looks really sharp.
Yeah.
So I hope that it doesn't get to a point where, like, if we go to Hoth, I'm like, this looks like garbage. And then you go to, like, another sequence, and you're like, oh, this looks really, really nice. So I'd love to see them maybe up now that they have this going on. I don't know. Is it possible to go back and touch up the old sequences? That's not impossible, but I don't know if they'll do it. I don't know if it's worth their money. What'd you think about it, Melissa?
I liked it. I do think that the quality of it, both in how it looks and just the content, kind of makes some of the older ones seem a little wanting. Like I was telling you, Pete, the other day, like Steph and I had gone and we had seen the scene for episode, what did we say? Was that episode 3 with the buzz droids?
Buzz droids is episode 3, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, there's just not much going on in that scene. And, like, I don't know. It just makes me feel like, do I need this? I don't know. It's weird.
I mean, I wouldn't say there's nothing amazing.
But it's better than driving through traffic in the buzz droid scene. Like, I don't know. It's just
okay.
Like a weird...
Oh, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be up to an individual because some individual may say, I'd rather go through that action sequence than getting dirt on the windshield. You know, so it's all going to be up to the individual. I just worry about the, you know, the scenes going together sometimes maybe looking a little different in terms of visual quality.
Yeah.
That would be more of like a thing. But the new part of this, and this is really also where I'm curious as to how they're going to do this with the older sequences. If you remember correctly, if you've ever gone on Star Tours, the second sequence, like action sequence, always also brings your ride to a finish. Well, not anymore. You take an additional jump, and you land on Batuu, which is the location of Galaxy's Edge. And let me tell you, when you come around that little, you know, hill or whatnot, and you get the reveal of Batuu, it is awesome looking. And the idea is that you are landing, you know, there, and then, you know, you leave Star Tours and you're there, even though you're not there when you leave Star Tours. We're going to talk about the geography of the park in just a moment. But it was very cool to see it. I really got excited, you know, for what's to come in, I guess, a year and a half-ish, right around there, year and a half, 2 years, for us here in Orlando. Looked great. But again, I don't understand how this sequence can be usable with any of the other sequences except for the one that includes the extra jump to light speed. I don't know. What do you think, Melissa? I mean, does it work at all?
Yeah, I don't know. I was actually just trying to look up a map of Hollywood Studios because the only thing I'm thinking is that at some point, like, you... I don't know, like, if they're keeping this one Galaxy's Edge open. Do we know?
I'm sure,
like, always
a
thing? Because, like, I don't know. Now you exit the attraction and you exit through the gift shop, and the gift shop now exits onto, like, this road that then becomes the Californian-themed tap house baseline. So... yeah, I don't know if they're going to, like, at some point move the exit of the attraction, because I feel like they need to. Because, yeah, it is, like, a really weird, like, you're in Galaxy's Edge. Oh, wait, not really.
Yes, that's going to be weird. Also, though, what
is
do you think
you
about...
me? I'm sorry.
No, it's a different question. but what did you think...
It's early, guy.
What do you think about...
the sequence?
The sequence. You can't use that last sequence with... any of the other sequences. Because in all the other sequences, you land somewhere and you're done and 3PO says goodbye. And in this one, it's only usable because the sequence on Crate.
I don't know, Ryan's shaking his head vehemently.
So Geonosis has the same problem. Geonosis has, you go through the Death Star piece and you have the fight and then you make one extra jump. And you end up with the fleet, and you end up landing on one of the fleet ships.
Okay.
So they've done it before, but that it's specifically tied to that to the Geonosis scene. So I would imagine this one will be specifically tied to Crate.
I guess, which is kind of a bummer though, because it's a really nice exclamation point on the end of the ride, and you're where you're supposed to be.
Right.
Are they planning on the next Star Wars movie in the trilogy, Episode 9, isn't due out until 2019, right?
It would be 2019, yeah.
So, like they had done with Force Awakens, maybe keeping this Last Jedi scene in for the next year, tied with Galaxy's Edge ending, and then once we get like the new film coming up, we'll have Galaxy's Edge already open, so then maybe they can work out, you know, some of those other endings and maybe do some edits, because
I feel like they're not going to do that.
I tell you what wouldn't shock me is that once Galaxy's Edge is open, that they retool Star Tours again.
Yeah. I'd be fine with that. Shut it down, maybe, you know, if you have to. Or you don't have to shut it down. You just keep that one sequence going and you work in the back end, because you don't really need to shut anything down.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. It's a cool new sequence. I look forward to it, seeing it in the film with a little more context. And huzzah. Just really quick, Ryan, towards the geography of getting out of Star Tours and getting into Galaxy's Edge, not right next to each other.
No, but I think Hollywood Studios has a better pathway, even though there's going to be some pieces in between, than Disneyland, where it's one's in Tomorrowland and one's on the other side of the park.
That is weird. Yeah,
it's really
so
bad.
At least it's a little bit closer here, so you can kind of make the argument of, you know, put your blinders on for 30 seconds and run. I don't know. You know, I always thought it would be kind of cool, like, if you did have this landing sequence at the end, and I thought about this a while back when they announced it, is, you know, you land there and, you know, there's a secret tunnel and you come out into the land. But that would the logistics of that are a nightmare. And I don't imagine that's what will ever happen.
Yeah. Unless they carve a new path on the right side of the left side as you're facing it of the Muppets, you know, unless they carve.
Yeah.
A path
out and around and behind.
Yeah. That would really be the only other way I could see it happening. So we will see. Time will tell. They are in full construction mode over there. It's kind of exciting. So this week's movie, you guys want to start talking about that?
Let's do it.
All right. So this week's movie was Escape to Witch Mountain. Now, I just want to take a little poll. Courtney, have you ever seen this film before?
No.
You sound quite sharp with me right now when you say that.
It was a simple no.
Oh, okay. Ryan, I'm assuming you've seen this one before.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Melissa, this was your first time watching it?
It was.
Okay. Melissa is deep into maps right now, folks. She is a cartographer looking for a path of which her construction skills will then inform her of how Disney will make this path to Galaxy's Edge.
I'll find a way.
Okay. Good luck. All right. So let's talk a little bit about Escape to Witch Mountain, which I will be totally honest, very much to talk about because there was not a lot of information available on this movie. Escape to Witch Mountain, released March 21st, 1975 in L.A., while it premiered in New York at a later date on July the 2nd. Upon release, the film pulled in $20 million while clocking in at 97 total minutes, and the production ran from the 18th of April through late June of 1974. Just to give you an overall idea of what this film is about, this is from AFI's website, and it basically it tags all their movies with like what's the major and minor subjects. So I'm going to list off the minor subjects of this film just to give you a good overall thing of what this movie's all about. It's very streamlined. Bears, chauffeurs, dogs, horses, mansions, puppeteers, surveillance devices, bullies, child custody, harmonicas, sheriffs, telepathy, cats, clairvoyance, levitation, lure of riches, which is a saying, evidently, spaceships and uncles. That pretty much wraps up the whole film. I really don't even have to tell you a plot at this point. And to quote Lex Luthor, what can any more ask?
That wasn't the plot? Because that felt like the plot.
It's kind of the plot. It's pretty amazing. I was reading that and I was like, yeah, this is spot on. Like this, whoever did this entry at AFI, they took the time. They took the time. The production team is directed by Richard Hogarth. It's not Hogarth. I think it's Richard Ho. No? Hoth? Richard.
How is it spelled?
It's directed by Richard. Huh?
How is it spelled?
H-O-U-G-H.
Huff.
Richard Huff and Puff. He also directed Legend of Hell House, which was based on a Richard Matheson script, who was also the writer of I Am Legend, which if you only know I Am Legend from the Will Smith movie, don't. Read the book. It's really, really cool. He also directed Disney's Watcher in the Woods, which will be featured on this show at a later date, which stars Bette Davis. And he also directed kind of a cult hit, Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, which became really well known for its car chase sequences and was even referenced in Tarantino's Death Proof, maybe strikes a little bit of a chord in your memory. Cinematography was by Frank V. Phillips. We had previously seen his work over on Bedknobs and Broomsticks, and we will see it in the near future with Peach Dragon, The Apple Dumpling Gang, The Black Hole, Return from Witch Mountain, which I don't think we'll watch, Island on Top of the World, which we had already watched, and we buried that thing so we wouldn't have to talk about it. But he also was a cinematographer behind the movie I cannot wait to talk about, Midnight Madness, which will be coming down later on. The pair of producers on this film was Jerome Cortland, who also produced Peach Dragon, Return to Witch Mountain. He also directed a lot of TV, including Knott's Landing, Dynasty, Love Boat, and a couple episodes of Wonderful World of Disney. Co-producing, or I would say the executive producer on this, was Ron Miller, of course, a husband of Diane Disney. He also produced The Black Cauldron, Tron, Fox and the Hound, Condor Man, it's a mixed bag, Watcher in the Woods, Midnight Madness, Black Hole, numerous episodes of Wonderful World of Color. Just a little more of a history on Ron Miller. He did become, you know, the president of Walt Disney Productions in 78, the CEO in 83. And while under him, Disney kind of became a target, you know, for corporate takeovers and whatnot. Roy E. Disney eventually kind of sort of pushed him out. Yeah, he didn't sort of push him out. He pushed him out. And this is how Michael Eisner, Frank Wells, and Jeffrey Katzenberg basically came into the fold, into Disney, which I know that a lot of people will immediately in their head say like, oh no, Michael Eisner, he went crazy later. honestly, it was Frank Wells that kind of kept him together. And without Frank Wells, his ego just sort of went a little bit out of control. But when that partnership was working, this company kind of, it's got saved. Like, it just got saved. We'll talk about that more. Ryan, I would imagine you would have a lot of things to say about towards that subject, yeah?
Yeah, and even if you're just looking at Walt Disney World, the things he did to save that area, the way how he saved Disneyland, and then the company as a whole, there's a lot there that he doesn't get credit for because people only remember, you know, the last 5 or plus years that where things got really kind of messed up.
Yeah. Katzenberg's a little bit of a mixed bag as well with his relationship with Disney, in particular his relationship with the animation teams, because if you watch Waking Sleeping Beauty, you'll get all you need about that relationship. On a brighter note, though, he kind of went by Ron Disney Miller, didn't he, for some time, Ryan? I feel like that's more familiar.
Diane Disney Miller.
Thank you.
For a while.
On sort of a brighter note, he did create Touchstone, which was the production company who did Splash. And what did we just talk about with Touchstone?
Dick Tracy.
He also, started the Disney Channel and began the development on what would become Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So there's a lot of positives to his, involvement in the company, but there was quite a big issue here. So anyways, we have a crew here and we have a title, but where did the story come from, Ryan? What is the history of Return to Witch Mountain?
So, Escape to Witch Mountain.
That's
and
the
Return
right
to Witch
one.
Mountain.
Yes.
No, they're both. They're both, actually. They're both novels from Alexander Key, who was an illustrator in the 20s and 30s before he became known as an author. In fact, a lot of his novels were set right down the road from me here in Franklin, North Carolina. Well, that's where he was living at the time, but all in the Blue Ridge. And Witch Mountain, he set specifically in the Blue Ridge Mountains. When the movie happens, it switches it to the Pacific Coast. So that's a change. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
But he was really the novelist. He wrote about 24 science fiction movies in his lifetime. A lot of things from, The Incredible Tide, The Forgotten Door. These are, if you've studied kind of his science fiction, it was really more known for human types of aliens coming to Earth and kind of dealing with, prejudice and bias and those kinds of things, which we see again in this movie. But it was also the screenplay was given to Robert M. Young, who is really, truly just almost your workaday screenwriter. He did a bunch of episodes, single episodes and a couple of runs on things like The Streets of San Francisco, Columbo, Kojak, The Waltons, the FBI, Night Gallery. Just a bunch of one-off kind of things, including Beyond Witch Mountain, which would have been was the third entry, but made for television off of the Witch Mountain series, which was extremely successful at the time. And they were hoping that this would be the pilot into a series that they would be able to run.
And that failed totally, didn't it, that pilot?
That pilot failed miserably.
So we have a story now, folks. We have a story. Actually, I really want to go and see like some of the other stuff, because obviously he had a tinge, for this kind of stuff. I just want to know how many more aliens were just like wearing dungarees. That's what I want to know.
All of them.
Melissa?
Yes?
Is there any actors in this film?
There's quite a few, but I'm only going to talk about like the main five.
Yeah. There's way too much. We're just going to talk about the kids, right? Let's talk about the kids.
Yeah. So, I'll talk about Tia first because she was probably the most interesting post this. She's played by Kim Richards. She was brought up in the live thread, as you may know her most recently. She is a housewife of Beverly Hills. So
what?
If you watch that show.
I don't watch that show.
You will know Kim Richards as her. And she played Tia. She, of course, came back for Return to Witch Mountain, and she actually did show up in the 2009 Race to Witch Mountain with The Rock, so I'll watch that. She was in 10 episodes of Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color. She was in 1976 John Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13.
Cool.
She was reunited with her other kid actor in a TV movie called Devil Dog, The Hound of Hell.
That's a great title.
Yeah, I thought that was
a really good title.
She's had an interesting career because in 2006 she was in Black Snake Moan with Christina Ricci.
Mm-hmm.
But then Same she terms. Was also in Sharknado 3.
Uh-uh.
So
paycheck's a paycheck, and for some reason people keep thinking those movies are funny. So
yeah, and another little interesting fact: Kim Richards is also Paris Hilton's aunt. So
sure,
got a lot of interesting stuff going on there. Her partner in crime in the movie, Tony, is played by Ike Iserman.
Also her Iserman. Brother. I mean, it's okay.
Ike Iserman.
It's a bad name.
Yeah. There's a couple of IMDb different spellings of his name, too, which is interesting.
Is one of them just Ice?
No.
Erman?
No.
That'd be good.
He also came back for Return from Witch Mountain and the 2009 Race to Witch Mountain. He was in 6 episodes of The Wonderful World of Color, and he actually did some voice dubbing. He did additional voices in Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind and Howl's Moving Castle, and he was also in The Hunchback of Notre Dame 2.
Okay, yeah. I mean,
had some quality in that.
Throwing in that deuce was like, oh, that one.
And also, he was in Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan.
What?
He was Preston.
I don't know who Preston is.
I don't know. I figured since they gave his character a name, he was in it more than, you know.
That's not his kid, is it, Ryan? If that's Khan's kid, I'm ending the show right now. What's his name? Preston?
Preston.
Give me 30 seconds, and I'll let you know.
I thought it was interesting, yeah.
Peter Preston. Wait a minute. Oh my God, it's Scotty's nephew.
Yep.
The kid, I mean, they don't actually say it in the movie, but that's actually the reality of it. Well, not the reality of it. It's not real. The person who's working with Scotty who gets blown up and killed during Khan's attack, Scotty gets like really, really torn up about it. It's like his nephew or something like that. That is 100% him. He was killed by Ricardo Montalban. That's phenomenal. We can, all right, the show can continue.
It's good? Okay.
Yeah, we're good.
We also have, I guess, one of our villains, Mr. Lucas Darien? How did they say his name?
Dandelion.
No, not it. Darien?
Duranian.
There you go, Duranian. It's spelt so much differently than it sounds, because it sounds like uranium, but it's not spelt that way at all. He is played by Mr. Donald Pleasance.
Legend.
He had really interesting career. I don't know.
He had a massive career. It wasn't interesting. It was awesome.
It was extremely long. I found a common thread in a lot of the titles of his films.
Doctor.
No.
He's a doctor in a lot of things.
He is, but he's also in a lot of horror movies.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go down a little list of the movies that I found him in. He played Satan in The Greatest Story Ever Told from 1965. He was in Fantastic Voyage, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Of course, he was Loomis in Halloween.
There we go. Okay.
All the Halloweens, pretty much. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and The Curse of Michael Myers.
You know what? Those movies, except for the first one now, don't exist anymore, which is kind of funny.
He was in Escape from New York, so I thought you'd like that one.
Yep.
He was in 1979's Dracula. He was...
With Frank Langella? Oh, is that the one with Frank Langella? He's a sexy Dracula, folks. What year was that?
1979, yeah.
All right. I feel like Langella's was 1975. God, it's so stupid that I have these numbers in my head.
Well, not too wrong. He also was in A Wonderful World of Color called The Horse Masters.
It's the one with Frank Langella. It's so good. That's one of the best ones ever.
And he was...
It's like David Copperfield. Frank Langella legitimately looks like David Copperfield as Dracula. Everyone look that up. I'm so sorry. This is exciting.
No, you're fine. I'm glad it was exciting.
Look, that's Nixon. Look at sexy Nixon. Sexy Dracula Nixon. Ah, it's so good. So good. Okay.
And finally, I just have a note. He was in a TV series from 1956 to 1968, The Adventures of Robin Hood.
Cool. Donald Pleasence is great. He's a legend. He's awesome.
I did keep waiting for the Halloween music when he came on screen. I'm like, where is it?
I know.
Like, just give me the beats. Like, just come on.
I mean, Loomis is what he'll always be known for.
Yeah.
See, Courtney knows what's up. Courtney just found sexy Frank Langella Dracula.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Look at that shirt. There's no buttons on that shirt. You want to know why? It's held together by musk.
Ew. Ew.
It's hot. Okay. All right. So sexy Loomis, right? That's what we were talking about? Sure. Super sexy Loomis? Super sexy Loomis is the hottest of doctors. He shot him 6 times, people, if you remember correctly. All right.
Weird.
Thank you, Loomis.
Let's move on. Let's move on to our other villain,
Aristotle.
Thank you. Aristotle Bolt.
Okay, that shouldn't have been a word you stumbled on.
No, I know. It's just looking at it was weird. He's played by Ray Milland, who you might know from Dial M for Murder, The Lost Weekend, Reap the Wild Wind. It was a Cecil B. DeMille movie featuring John Wayne. And he actually got to defeat John Wayne in the movie, which I thought was quite interesting.
Did he use an upside down helicopter?
KO!
That's how he defeats him. Just confusion. And he was also in two TV long running TV shows. Well, sort of. The Ray Milland Show and Markham from 1959 to 1960.
All right. Did you say it was long running and then just said it lasted a year?
No, the other one was kind of long. The other one was. The Ray Milland Show is longer.
Okay.
And then finally we have Jason O'Day, played by Eddie Albert. He's probably best known for his work in Green Acres. He played Oliver Wendell Douglas.
Oh, my God. That's right.
Yes. That was
I went totally unaware through the whole film, not putting that together.
He also did another similar TV show in Petticoat Junction. He was in The Heartbreak Kid in 1972. He was in The Longest Day, Roman Holiday, 1955's Oklahoma, and 1957's The Sun Also Rises with Ava Gardner and Errol Flynn, which we had seen before.
Yeah.
And he did some voice work later in his life in the Spider-Man TV series. In the 90s, he played Vulture.
In the Fox animated ones?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
That's really cool. There is one other I just want to say. She's in it very quickly, but Retta Shaw plays Mrs. Grindley. And we know Retta Shaw as one of the, what's the domestics?
Domestics.
From Mary Poppins.
Yes. She was cook, right? Yeah.
Yeah. This was her last performance before escaping into a mountain. Which was a spaceship. What the hell? So, Courtney.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure music happens in this film, usually with a harmonica attached to it. But what about the music of this film? Did I not notice all of it, or what happened there?
Well, there was a startling lack of music in several places, and then an overabundance of music I had no desire to hear in other times. Yeah. So that was very interesting.
You know what? You tell that to John Popper, all right?
I'm going to tell it to Johnny Mandel, the composer of this score. So Johnny Mandel, he is probably best known for composing the theme song to MASH, Suicide is Painless.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, funny story. Robert Altman asked him to write the lyrics to this as well, but he wanted it to be super, super childish, and Johnny Mandel couldn't, actually compose lyrics that were that childish, so he had his son write the lyrics to the song.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, so that's probably what he's best known for. And he, you know, he was nominated for several awards in his life, but he only won one Oscar for the song The Shadow of Your Smile from The Sandpiper, which, check out that recording. Song by Tony Bennett. It is quite classic.
Oh, cool.
It's very good.
Cool.
So Johnny Mandel, he was trained at the Manhattan School of Music and at Juilliard, and he was most well known for being a jazz arranger. And he worked with people like Count Basie, Chet Baker, Buddy Rich, Frank Sinatra, and Barbara Streisand, among many others.
Jesus.
Yeah, he very recently did a lot of arranging for Barbara Streisand.
Oh,
And other notable scores we might know by Johnny Mandel are Freaky Friday from 1976 and Caddyshack from 1980.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So we know that one. That's a fun one. And then, you know, a couple other things I noticed here was the music. Anybody else notice that the music during the marionette scene sounded a lot like the Fantasyland soundtracks at Disneyland? Some of those soundtracks, mm-hmm. Pinocchio's Village House, Matterhorn, those were kind of similar soundtracks. Listen for that when you guys go next month.
Yeah, I'll have to actually, or I can. I also have the it's that awesome archive CD, the Walt Disney Collection or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really great stuff. I'll listen to that too.
Yeah, there's a lot of parallels there.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah, and I would say that he should have won an award for the most harmonica arrangements in a single movie because what the hell?
hey, harmonicas are magic. Harmonicas are magic.
It's true.
I mean,
especially in this case.
I can't argue that because Springsteen does a really good job with it.
He does.
And so does Billy Joel. But
and John Popper. Why is no one giving love to John Popper right now? Is this like an anti-John Popper show?
I don't know John Popper.
Are you out of your mind?
Probably.
Do you even know? What do you know? You know Blues Traveler, right?
I've heard of it.
All right, we're gonna move on. You guys want to know about the plot?
Didn't you read us those words?
We just read it.
Should I? No. I have a plot. This is for people who haven't seen this. Just to give you an overall of the plot. Tia and Tony are two orphans who also have incredible powers. Tony can move things with his mind using his harmonica. Unless it's earlier in the film where he can fly at will and punch people with baseball mitts without the use of the harmonica. So the rules kind of change whenever they just need to in that one. Tia, on the other hand, can communicate telepathically and even speak to animals who in turn understand English. So it's always important to understand animals know English. Just talk to them English, they do it. They can also see the future to a certain extent. Additionally, during this whole sort of intro of the movie, Tia is slowly remembering their past, which is currently lost to the two children. Finally, they have a cat named Winky, who does indeed wink. And that happens. They save the doctor from Halloween from a car crash by foreseeing the future, and he is impressed, which is good. But he tells his employer about this, and for some reason never explained throughout the entire film, his boss, Mr. Bolt, needs these children to do something. We are never told, ever, what that is. Halloween doctor forges paperwork and claims to be the children's uncle. At first, the kids are wowed when they are actually brought to their new home and meet their uncle's bosses, you know, the aforementioned Mr. Bolt. The same man whose plan is to complete this mystery that he has in his head to everyone but himself. But anyways, their enjoyment lasts about 15 minutes when they realize something is really up. They have no idea what will happen because we don't know either. But it's bad, so the two kids escape. They meet, I put down not Archie Bunker. I didn't realize it was a guy from Green Acres, but they meet not Archie Bunker while on the road. And while he first flat states how he hates children, the world, and the price of gas, he decides to help them escape. Tia also discovers a map in her star brick thing that looks like something Apple would sell. Anything with polished metal, I just think Apple's going to sell that eventually. A lot of smaller things then happen, including a bear that has more screen time than Donald Pleasance, an upside-down flying helicopter, and a town ready to murder two children because Boss Hoss says they are witches. But get this, don't worry about it. Kids are aliens. They live in the mountains after living on a different planet, and they're crash-shipped on Earth, and their real uncle, Uncle Benet, wears a lot of denim, and when not Archie Bunker learns to love again, he gets them to the top of a hill. They fly off into a mountain with their alien uncle. Which mountain, you ask? Which mountain? Which mountain? I don't know. Third base. The end. That is the movie in the best of terms.
Yeah.
So, did I miss anything? I think that's pretty complete.
It's pretty accurate.
I mean, there's a lot. I will say right now, I will admit, the third act of this film drags some heavy ass.
Because they do like the same thing we've seen with a lot of other
a 20-minute chase
car
scene. Yeah. They really, really love their uninteresting car chase sequences in Disney. They really do.
One of them goes up a tree, but nobody's hurt. There's the helicopter tailing the people in the cars. It's like...
That helicopter flies upside down for a majority of the runtime of this movie.
Yeah, I don't think that's how helicopters work. Pretty sure. Pretty sure that wouldn't land like that either.
I just loved how they figured out they're upside down by having, like, blatantly gelled hair. Not the most natural-looking hair.
Yeah.
Flying upside down. Ryan.
Yes.
This is a movie that was made a long time ago. I believe I said 75 is what I said. What do you think? When this movie came, when you were younger, did you enjoy this film?
When I was younger, what I remember is like starting it, getting interested, taking a nap, and waking up at the end of it.
Sounds about right.
Like, that's what I remember from watching it in my childhood. And those are fond memories. Because I missed a good portion of the stuff that was going on in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the middle section of this film really drags. I mean, look, Melissa, you obviously didn't like this movie. Did you enjoy the start, though? Like, do you think that it set up anything interesting? No? Even when, like, not Miss Doubtfire picked them up from the school, that is so who he based that on.
Yeah.
I'm convinced that the woman from the beginning was definitely the Miss Doubtfire birth off.
I got really caught up because, like you said, like the establishing of their powers and the rules of their powers made no sense. It came out of nowhere. And then, like, while we were in the thread, we're like, okay, she's like Jean Grey, but maybe she was the one who lifted him up because he didn't have the harmonica. And then all of a sudden it was established he needed the harmonica. But then there were points where all of a sudden he would say, sometimes he can do it. I don't know. Yeah. It got really weird. So I got caught up in, like, what are they doing? Why all of a sudden is this... Like, I felt like with a lot of the things the kids did, whether it was all of a sudden remembering that they were from another planet or, you know, talking about their Uncle Benet, like, stuff was just thrown out. Like, oh, I just remember that this is now two suns, even though I've had this case.
They do that for, like, the last 20 minutes. It is exposition hallway.
Yeah.
Where they're just like, oh, this. Courtney, going off all that, first, can you ask me one question? The young boy in the beginning is getting bullied by another kid. And Tony says, he's got 50 pounds on me. On what planet Earth does that boy weigh 50 pounds more than that other boy?
Well, maybe not on the planet Earth, but since the kid's an alien, maybe he weighs like 0 pounds.
Oh my God.
Mind blown.
So on a scale of yes to absolutely, how much did you love this movie?
how about one?
What? No. You couldn't.
No, it was just very basic to me. The storyline was very basic. Nothing really happened for a lot of it. I, like Ryan, desired to take a nap through a good portion of this. I just felt like it was very basic. There were things that were not established, like Melissa said. It was just a little confuddling to me.
Yeah, I feel like they could have developed, like, the Aristotle Bolt end of it.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Versus the 20-minute car scene.
All right, so, Ryan, you looked into the background a little bit more on this story, and I read something I'm sure that you know. So, Aristotle Bolt, what the hell?
Does not exist in the story.
Yeah.
He is, in the story, our doctor from Halloween, Loomis, actually has... he works for a European cabal.
Yes, like, that's what he works cabals.
For. A cabal. And so, like, it's like this shadow organization that wants to, you know, take the children and use them for their, you know, use their powers for their own will, which they gave body to in Bolt in this film, but it's never explained that that's what he really wants. He's like, yes, I just want them on my side. You know, for what point and purpose doesn't make sense.
Well, if I can interject, because they do have that scene with Bolt initially where he's like talking to all like the mystics and like things like that.
The white man with the turban.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy.
The quote unquote mystic, yeah. So like it seems like he's trying to use other powers to gain wealth.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought he was one of the children
for. I thought he was just trying to play the stock market. I swear to God, that's all. I was like, all right, well, yeah, I mean, that's a way to do it.
All I kept thinking was, this is what happens when Annie goes wrong. Like, this is what happens.
But it's like they don't set up the kids like have that type of like clairvoyance. Like, it's very limited because they even say like, we don't know of places like that we haven't been to. So like, how could they tell this guy the future? Like, you should invest in, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or
but
whatever.
Yeah, that, ultimately that wasn't what his thing was. I don't know what the hell. That's the thing. It's never explained.
Yeah.
It's absolutely
like
never explained.
Like, you could maybe infer that he wanted their powers for something like that, but then, like, their powers aren't really capable of that. So, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Unless he's, like, just a creepy man with a lot of video cameras, guys. A lot of video cameras in their room.
I think you run into the fact of you know, clearly she tells them to go to bed at one point and, or that they need to go to bed, and it's like, oh, okay, maybe he can use that to influence people to give him what he wants, so, you know, in like buyout situations or stuff like that. But
it didn't even last any long, like very long, because then they go in the other room, they have
and
a
they
conversation.
Just have a conversation. Like, neither of them went to bed.
Yeah, no.
But they just left the room.
And it's like, all right.
I'm still confused as to whether or not that was mind control or just like they're like, all right, we'll do what she says. Just like placate this kid. I don't know what I'm supposed to think either way. I wasn't really too sure, but this movie's great.
Let's just talk about how nobody got shot when the gun that got cocked pointed at them just dropped to the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's also there's something that you see throughout the entire film is a lack of reaction to any of the actions happening around people.
Yeah.
I know the uncle does it, you know, quite a lot, but my favorite one was the cop. When the cop's motorcycle, like the kickstand goes off, he literally just looks from the left to the right. As if a bird flew by, and he's like, bird. Like, he just looks left to right. It's as if the direct, like, they were on set, there was no motorcycle, and someone just called his name while the camera was rolling, and they're like, we got it. Let's move on. Move on. We got the reaction shot. And it happens throughout this movie. Donald Pleasance sees a goddamn UFO, and he literally gets in the car and says, I knew they were more than just psychics. What? I was like, is that it? That's your big reaction? No one cares.
No.
Like, that these people are aliens. They
and
just
even, yeah.
I guess.
Even
yeah,
Jason, when he like the kid's like, we're from another planet, he's like, okay.
Yeah, just the uncle is like, yes. I believe everything you are telling me. Like, unequivocally, they tell him. They just start rambling. Like, Courtney, we were talking about this, you know, the magic revelations where, like, it went from a memory every, like, 10 to 15 minutes in the movie to, like, memory lane, you know, like, in this one drive, it was all there. And not Archie Bunker is just like, yeah, you're aliens. Clearly, you came here in a spaceship, and I have to give you to your alien people.
I mean, I don't know what to make of that, really, because if I had seen a couple of kids do all the crap that they did in front of him, maybe I would believe they were aliens too.
At that point, yeah.
But he just takes it. He's like, yep, cool. You're aliens. No argument at all. No questions.
Yeah.
More importantly, no questions.
Yeah.
He's just cool with it.
Ryan, there's a scene in this movie that, dare I say, influenced a movie that's kind of good. Not kind of good, maybe one of the best movies of all time. So the kids are in the Winnebago, if I remember correctly. They're in some kind of car.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Pleasance blocks the road. And this car takes up off the ground and goes up into the air. Am I out of my mind? Is this really... It kind of looks
aliens.
The same.
Oh my gosh, and they're aliens.
Yeah, it kind of looks exactly the same. Also, I want to point out, Donald Pleasance doesn't bat an eyelash at any of this.
No, he just watches it go up. Like, oh, look,
yeah,
to the flying Winnebago.
He just watches it go up. I don't know. Did you get that impression at all, Ryan?
Yes. Yeah, the minute you see it, you're like, that's E.T. Like, that's exactly where they got that idea from.
That was so weird. I didn't remember that scene at all. That thing happened, and I was like, the hell is this?
It's actually really funny. Like, there's apparently more draws off of the work. Like, there's like the Forgotten Door is another work by Key that gets tied to E.T. quite a bit, but it predates E.T. by over a decade. Like, so there's a lot of ties in there to Key's work and then some of the films that came out of that to what goes into E.T. later.
Oh, wow. Put Melissa Matheson on Burn. I think that was Melissa Matheson. Pretty sure it was. If I'm wrong, I don't know. Write an email. Melissa, tell me about this cat.
Yes. Can we talk about this cat?
That double take wink was so good.
Can we also talk about how disappointing it was that the cat was just like a cat, I guess? It was so underwhelming at the end. I was like, the cat winks.
Hocus Pocus has gotten in your
head. That's the thing. She's just thinking Hocus Pocus. A bunch of garbage.
I didn't think he would be like a human or anything, but I wanted more. Like, I thought he was like a mystical cat. Like, maybe he was there from...
That was the white man in the turban from the beginning. Turned him into a cat. And then he
could... It was McGonagall. That's what that was.
Anything I'd be okay with. It was just like such a... No payoff. I was like...
There was a payoff because that cat winked twice. And it totally just wasn't the camera going in reverse. It looked genuine.
They were not using boomerangs. They were not.
That cat winking is the equivalent of the double take pigeon in Voodoo Bond. Which one's the Voodoo Bond? Live and Let Die? There is a pigeon that does a double take. When, like, a car, like, goes by and this and that. It actually, they filmed a pigeon turning its head, and they reverse filmed, they boomerang it, and a pigeon does a double take. That was the same as this cat doing that wink. I loved it.
I was just disappointed, because I wanted more from the cat.
Cat winked when you said wink.
There was portions of the movie where the cat seemed to, like, know what was going on. So, like, I thought he was more, like, conscious than, like...
The cat fetched a pair of keys like a golden retriever.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. Oh, that was another thing. Hey, Courtney, let me ask you something.
What?
If like, two kids that you just met are in your car keys are gone, and one of them starts a car with her mind, how fast do you set that girl on fire?
Immediately. She's definitely a witch.
Yeah.
If you know of which mountain, I mean, just burn that kid up.
Which mountain?
Which mountain?
Which mountain?
Which mountain?
All right, but which mountain?
Third base.
Third base. All the animals that they talked to and or saved were black. I just thought that was interesting. The black horse, black cat, black bear, black dogs. There's a theme.
Also, black bear. Were those kids hanging out with a black bear?
Yes, that was actual bear. The bear was only allowed on set for about 10 minutes a day. And since the kids could only work 2 hours a day due to labor laws, that was a tight window. That is a real bear. They are petting a real bear. Real bear, I'm assuming, is heavily sedated. I'm going to say, because this is the mid-70s, and it is the Wild West when it comes to animal rights in films.
That's true.
So...
And Tony looks super chill petting it, too. He's just like, hey, Mr. Bear, no big deal.
Maybe the kid was heavily sedated, too.
Yeah.
Probably was. Is it legal to throw minors into, like, prison cells? Is that a thing?
I don't think so.
Can you do that? Because Boss Hostus does that, and I thought that was weird.
And somebody's watched a little bit too much of the Andy Griffith Show is what that happened there.
Yeah, that's true. Let's talk about Uncle Benet.
Beignets.
I want to more talk about his outfit.
He was on Canadian tuxedo.
When he came out of those trees, I was like, go back in the trees, young man. Put on some damn clothes that look proper. And, your last button is grasping for its life. It was like that fold up where you can see into a shirt. It was very, very, very disappointing. It was very upsetting. That was really upsetting.
Yeah, his outfit looks like his actual name. His name is Denver Pyle.
Nope, that works.
Man, I'm a little... Okay, so...
I also...
Did they fly a ship into a damn mountain at the end of this movie? What is going on?
Yeah, like...
I thought they landed it in the fog. Like, I thought it was, like, in the valley.
Why don't they just go home?
No, didn't their planet get destroyed?
They don't have a home anymore.
It's Superman.
I missed that part, totally.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why they all, like, came here.
And their last industry was making spaceships.
Making spaceships.
Wally, apparently. So like, by and large, is what happened here, and then they all came... Be a Superman.
I like how they were making spaceships for a planet where people like weren't generally leaving the spaceship, but everyone then needed said spaceships to escape the planet. That worked out nice.
Well, maybe because they knew like the two sun system wasn't very stable, so they were like, we gotta get a backup plan going.
That was another great like non-reaction.
Yeah.
When the kid's like, we have two suns, and you know Archie Bunker's like, I'm gonna keep driving this car. I would have hit the damn brakes so hard. Like, what? You live on Tatooine? Like, that's all I would have wanted to know. I guess I did again. I wouldn't have, because that movie did not come out yet when this was in the theaters. No. No. Don't even tell me that George Lucas got the twin sun idea from Escape from Witch Mountain.
There is so much science fiction in binary sun systems. Yeah. It's... Could be any number of those.
Nope, never happened before. Before this.
So really, Tony is Anakin Skywalker.
Sure. All right. So I will.
That's
you know,
why Darth Vader has the little harmonica thing in his helmet. Yes, I'm nailing it.
Silence. This movie ends on some music that I really felt was so Space Mountain. It sounded exactly like Space Mountain-y.
I don't remember music like at all.
There was a moment where I actually asked Melissa, I was like, has there been any music in this movie? And outside of like Crazy Harmonica Boy. And I don't think so.
No, because they would use the music heavily with her like memories and with his harmonica. And then like during the parts where you would probably want to put music like the car chase scene or them escaping the mansion, like it was just silence. And I think that's what makes these movies very awkward, like because there's a lot of those movies we've watched, like Herbie with the car and No Mobile with the car chase scene in particular. Like it's just silent car chase and you just hear like the tires screech and stuff, but it's just not interesting.
No,
and it makes it drag out.
If it's not interesting, it's going to be incredibly boring because like there's large swatches of time in Death Proof, like to reference that again, where there's no music, but that car chase is insane.
Yeah, and it's interesting.
You know, yeah, it's really interesting. Like Zoe Bell is like hanging on to, like if they had one of the kids hanging on to the roof of the car, it would have been like, all right.
But these cars don't, like they'll get damaged.
No,
but
they're
gets
like
hurt.
They're just like Chevy Novas. Yeah. It's like I got my Renault over here, and we're gonna have a chase scene at roughly 30 miles an hour. And, you know, make sure you don't hit any squirrels. It's very uninteresting. I won't say the movie's uninteresting, though. I think the movie's kind of phenomenal. does anyone else want to say? Courtney, what are your final thoughts on just anything detail that you want to speak about towards the movie?
I mean, the locations for filming were beautiful. I mean, we got a lot of beautiful beach. We got a lot of like iconic California shots. That was something positive that I took from it, being from California.
All right.
Okay. I liked that.
Ryan, did any,
So I really liked it in the title card sequence, like the opening sequence with the cutouts of the kids running, and then it would expand to the next scene, and then the dogs would be animated coming through, and it just kept repeating. I just really liked how that looked.
Yeah, when that started, I was like, yeah, this is that late 70s, early 80s, like creepy Disney.
Yeah.
Like this is the start of it.
It was weird.
But
it felt kind of Nancy Drew, Hardy Boys sort of.
Yeah. Venture Brothers-ish. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Melissa, did you want to, you know, any last little things before we get into our three questions about this film?
No, it just the movie had like a lot of ties to other movies that we've watched or will watch, and I just thought it was really interesting.
Like what?
Well, the thing that sticks out the most, we kind of glossed over the whole like nursery scene where they're like playing with the puppets or whatever.
We didn't gloss over. We didn't talk about it. Yeah, let's talk about it.
first of all, it was really weird. Second of all, it was very like Mary Poppins, like the toys coming to life kind of thing. Yeah. Even though, like, I know they had like strings on them or whatever, but I don't know. It was just creepy because of the camera stuff that became really weird.
Well, obviously he was watching them, though.
It's just weird.
I don't know. I felt like that was a given. That didn't shock me when it happened. I was like, well, yeah,
no,
of
I
course.
Didn't say it was shocking. It was just weird.
I mean, the only thing weird about that whole sequence was that one marionette looked like humanish, and it was kind of creepy.
Yeah, the creepy clown one?
Yeah, yeah.
The goose Pennywise one?
Yeah, it was to the left. Yeah. That was kind of like, how the hell did this demon spawn get into the shot?
The goose was also creepy because it had like human legs. It was weird.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was weird.
It had human legs?
Yeah, on a goose. On the goose.
These were all marionettes that Sid made.
Yeah. Yeah. That's accurate. All right, so we have a Toy Story tie.
Wasn't a swan?
I don't know.
Long, slender neck?
It looked like a goose, honestly, with the bill. Because they have, like, the thicker bills.
I have no idea.
I don't know. I'm going by Robin Hood.
I was going to say, you're not an animal expert. I want everyone to be aware that...
I am a movie animal expert?
Okay, sure.
All right. No animals were harmed. That's where we draw the line.
Let's ask we have three questions that we normally ask, right?
Yeah.
All right. Melissa, well, what is the first answer that we usually ask?
The first question we ask is, well...
Did I say question?
You did not. It's okay.
What did I say?
Answer.
Answer.
Sure.
We're going to... answer the question.
Let's do it in reverse. What is the answer to the first question?
Oh, good Lord. I don't know. It depends what order we want to put these in. So,
oh, I got it.
Let's ask.
Oh, no. I'm going to Jeopardy this for you, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to Jeopardy this for you. And then you're going to say what the question is.
Ooh,
get it?
It's
not that difficult. Oh, my God. Do I have to like pause this to explain this to her?
No, go ahead.
Okay. No, do it. Go.
What is non-existent?
What is the iconic shot of the film?
No, that's the moral. Jesus Christ. By default, there has to be an iconic shot because there is a shot in the film.
But is it iconic?
No. But if, come on, we haven't had trouble finding them in some other pieces that we've done here. The moral. When one doesn't know the plot of a film, it is very hard to derive a moral from a film.
Mm-hmm.
I got nothing on this one. I mean nothing. I don't have a moral. I don't have a message. I don't have a plot. Like, I get the plot. Kids are aliens, got to get to Witch Mountain. It's just that I don't know what the hell the other guy wants the kids for.
No, but I think it comes in the form of the police officer, the locals, you know, that this, you know, this fear of people who aren't like you, this prejudice, like bias kind of thing, which that may be because I read a lot of the stuff on Key this week that was kind of a heavy messaging in a lot of his books.
Okay.
And so I was like, I was able to see it when I watched it. But it's heavy handed when it's dealt with in that form. And then you don't see it as much when you see it when they're dealing with Bolt and Loomis and everyone else.
Yeah, because she like kind of references it like, oh, we can't do our things like we did because the other kids will hate us, like the
voguing.
So like, I guess it's mentioned, but it's not really like shown.
And then it's kind of at the end with Uncle, you know, who's saying if there are more people like you, maybe there's not, you know, maybe hope for this world's not lost or whatever it is he says.
Yeah.
Why? Like, what can they do that will save Earth? Like lift things with harmonicas?
Yeah, so they don't have to like drill.
They built
stuff.
Pyramids. Yeah.
All right.
Aliens. That
explains it.
That explains it. Where's that Dr. Tall Hair that was doing all the.
That was in the thread. Stuff. I put that in.
That's how he got his hair like that. He was upside down in a helicopter.
And it stayed like that forever.
Courtney, did you think there's a moral or something going on here?
The only thing I could pull from it was maybe something emotional in the like kind of. The transformation in the like broadest terms of Jason O'Day, like, I hate kids. Now I want to be your dad.
Yeah. Roughly 30 minutes later, I want to point out.
And I never like, believed him from the beginning either.
No.
I never thought like this guy really hates kids. So it didn't play well anyway.
Not for a second. Yeah. I can see Ryan. I can see like the X-Men-esque message, mm-hmm. you know, the differences. But man, they really.
They need a Magneto.
They do it so slipshod that it doesn't matter.
Yes.
So, Ryan, what is the iconic shot of this movie?
A helicopter flying upside down next to a flying Winnebago.
I mean, he's not lying, folks. Is that really
one thing away? I think that's all you could take away from this.
It really is, though.
I mean, unless it's the UFO, but like, yeah.
Let's be clear. It's not the UFO.
The UFO just, in the mountains?
Oh, my God. It looked bad.
It did.
That looked really, really bad. Melissa, do you have an iconic shot for this movie?
No, nothing stood out. Because I don't think there's one thing that like encompasses the entire movie. I would probably just have to go with the UFO. Because also, like, I didn't feel like which mountain was really like...
Which mountain looked like a hill?
Like, talked about or mentioned, like, there was no, like, lore, like, don't go to which mountain. Like, I don't understand what they, like, why this was titled that, except because of the book.
They said that, like, don't witches live in the mountains or something.
It was,
like
a throwaway line. There was no, like, build up.
Girl, this whole movie is a bunch of throwaway lines. Throwaway line, the movie.
I just wanted there to be, like, more, like, I don't know.
Is this the live action Brave for you? Is that what's going on here?
I guess.
My mother's a bear alien. Courtney, is there a iconic shot for you in this film? Let me rephrase. What is the iconic shot?
Well, I don't know if there is one. I still kind of go with that, but I just went with a shot that I thought was cute. So I have the shot of the kids with the flower on their face when he opens the door to the RV.
That's a good one. Why does he have so much flower?
The minute I just wanted him to open it up and be like, kids like cocaine? Let's go. All
right. You saw the Deadpool trailer.
He's a drug runner. Getting...
I definitely did. I have two iconic shot nominees, and then we can vote on which one wins. Winking cat. Just like that. Winking cat. Actually, the only iconic shot in this movie is the credits. It's when the kids, you know, freeze frame the kids running with the dogs, chasing them. It really doesn't count in a sense. It is a shot that happens in the film, in the movie, like during its runtime. But really, there's no visual setups in this film. There's no interesting visual setups.
They didn't even like run to which mountain. I'm disappointed.
They actually didn't run.
No, they drove.
They did. They drove.
And then they flew the UFO.
Yeah. I never thought of that. I mean, it doesn't. The title of the movie isn't Run to.
They fixed it with the rock version because it's the race to which mountain.
Yeah,
like, they're like, oh, clearly we're driving.
They're like, we got to make a 5K now.
The only good thing that came out of that stupid movie was that meme of the rock looking back in the chair. It's a meme online. It's. Yeah, exactly. Ryan just did it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Memes, folks. Welcome to the meme cast. All right. Final question. Sweet Jesus. Does it hold up? I'll get the two mean people out of the way first. Melissa.
I don't think it holds up. I don't know if you could sit a child down, let alone.
You can sit a child down for anything, number one.
Well,
they watch anything at a certain age.
But you can put them there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They won't stay there.
I'm not saying they're going to like write a thesis about it. I'm saying they will watch it.
They will nap.
Yeah.
Probably. I would nap.
All right. So you don't think it holds up?
No, because like you said, the plot's non-existent. I don't think some of the CG stuff holds up. And nothing like was thrilling.
You just described Chicken Little. That's all you did just now.
I've never seen it, so I don't know.
It's a preview of the future episode where I dismantle that stupid movie. Courtney?
Yeah. This, no. Just.
No, I heard a no. Yeah, it holds up. Yeah?
Oh, gosh. I wish I could say it did. I had high hopes for it from that opening sequence. I liked that whole, the blue and the black, and I was like, okay, this is going to be great. And nothing happens in this movie.
That's so unfair. There's a winking cat.
Okay, there are things that occur.
There are things that happen.
There are circumstances that arise, but there's no plot at all.
There's none.
Well,
outside of Escape to Witch Mountain.
But what do they need to escape from? Like, there's no like real threat.
They want to go back home. They don't want to be orphans their whole life.
They didn't even know they were going back home though. They had no idea what they were running to.
Eventually, Jason would be
some drowning dude.
Him.
her star-stickered iPod was telling her. Ryan, how much does this film hold up? Not does it.
It holds up on a nostalgic factor. If you grew up with this movie, if it's something that was part of your regular rotation of Disney films. But otherwise, no, it doesn't make it today. Like, I don't think that you could really put that in front of people and go, yes, this is one I want to add to my collection.
Yeah, I just tried that and evidently it did not work. So I guess
no.
The science has been done.
Orphan Children with Fake Adopted Uncle is done better also with Lemony Snicket. I wanted to point that out.
Okay. All right.
Ba-da-ba-da-da. Dun, dun. When does that second season come out?
I don't know. I really liked it. Netflix series.
It had a cool look to it.
It did.
And yeah,
it had a really cool Harris look to it, really I thought. Good. Who?
Neil Patrick Harris.
Okay. Does it hold up, Pete? No, it doesn't. But it's a pretty fun nostalgia trip to kind of go back and watch. And I actually do think that young kids would enjoy parts of it, like a fair amount. It's just that car chase sequence really kills everything. And then really Captain Dungarees coming out of those woods. That was the least interesting thing that could have happened.
Yeah.
Like, if that bear showed up again, it was like, I'm your father. I would have been like, ah, yeah, I mean, this makes more sense.
But the cat could have transformed into him. That would have been cool.
If the cat transformed into their father, then you would have been like, well, why didn't he just transform earlier?
Because he had to be near the mountain. Duh, that's where he gets his power from.
No.
Come on.
I have an alternate ending.
Okay. Oh,
the bear comes out and rips Captain Dungarees to pieces.
That would be great.
Yes.
And then it just comes up, Grizzly Man 2.
No.
And you're like, oh, snap! Watching that the whole time. That's a Grizzly Man reference.
I just wanted to see the kid who was climbing the pole at the children's home in the beginning, like climbing up the railing. I just wanted to keep seeing the kid just climb. Like, oh, now they're in a tree, and now they're on the side of a building.
So, unfortunately, folks, this week's film does not hold up over time. But... you absolutely should watch it, I think. You should watch the first hour and 10 minutes. But then you miss out on the upside-down flying helicopter. That's pretty damn good. It's
you can,
pretty
like,
good.
Skip.
Yeah, you can just, like...
the last 10 minutes.
You know what you do? Watch it in 2X. Watch it at twice the speed. So you don't really have to watch it, but you're seeing everything.
You're not missing the throwaway lines. Yeah.
Yeah. That might be the way to do it. That might be the way
you
to
might
do
miss
it.
The cat wink.
The
that'll be double timed.
You'll have two opportunities at least.
For the record, it looks like we're all having strokes over here, winking like a cat.
All right. Guys, I think that's the end of our show this week.
Yeah.
I want to thank Escape to Witch Mountain for providing my childhood with probably a lot of confusion. And I doubt that I figured out there was no plot when I was younger, but my God, there is no plot in that film to speak of. And it just sort of happens, like just moment by moment, just sort of happens. What are we doing next week? Do we know what we're doing next week? We know what we're doing next week.
Coco.
Yep.
Coco.
Oh, that's right. We're talking about Coco. That's right. So next week, we're going to review Coco.
And Olaf's Frozen Adventure.
Yep. That too. Yeah, we're going to talk about the Frozen short that's going to be attached to Coco. And
real quick, speaking of
Witch Mountain?
Of Olaf. I did a little write-up on the holidays at Hollywood Studios. If you want to go take a gander at that, I posted the article in the group, but you can go to lastgenpodcast.com. It's in the Mouse Telegram section. We really had fun with holidays at Hollywood Studios this year, and I think it's worth checking out if you're there.
All right, great.
I only say that because Olaf's around. So,
yes, Olaf. Everyone's favorite Olaf. All right, so hey, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Hope you enjoyed it. We're looking forward to speaking about Coco next week.
Yes.
That will, of course, be next week. Not this week. This week is the show that you've been listening to the whole time. How about that? This episode of Disney Magic Hour has been brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, and traveling anywhere around the globe, visit the experts over at meitravel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Right now, you're listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/PogoMix. His website is PogoMix.net. We are Last Gen Podcast, LASTGNPodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter at DizMagicHourPod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, we are the Disney Magic Hour. Nice and straightforward, very easy. Find it, add yourself. If you're already there, add your friends. You can find this show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. And Melissa, where else can they find us?
You can see Instagram, Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And again, you can help support the show with patreon.com/DisneyMagicHour.
Ryan, the Main Street Gazette. If one were to play a harmonica to raise up thy sight, where would they go?
They'd go to mainstgazette.com. They can search for us on Instagram or Twitter at mainstgazette. And we also have our Facebook page if you search for Main Street Gazette. Or just check out in the group. I typically will drop my articles in there as well.
Yes, yes, yes. Till next week. Say goodnight, Melissa.
Good night, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Courtney.
Good night, Courtney.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
Good night, Ryan.
Good night, Pete. And say goodnight, Pogo. And good night, winking cat.